Okay. And our first open mic reader is Barry Governor.
Thank you. I just need to say just a couple things here. Shawan Gunks is a tourist area, recreational area, about 2 hours north of Newark in New York State. Mohonk is a resort. It's the name of a reserve, but it's also the name of a resort. And I'll come to the word copperhead, which is not a snake. Taurus. We extend our climbs of Swangunk's rock walls by taking an excursion to the vistas of Mohonk Resort. We are cut-off jeans and worn t-shirts. Mohonk guests are eyes-odd. They lodge, we tent. They shoo an occasional mosquito. We fail to intimidate raccoons. Snug in sleeping bags, we fend October chill, sleep like Van Winkle, till the unbridled honks of southbound geese cut the night's quiet, wings slicing cool air, knifing to and through the black velvet valley. Misty morning, after ramen, noodles and tea, we head for Mohonk, skip the $10 grounds fee, a lot of ramen noodles, by scaling the walls that lead to the groomed for guest hiking trail. Wojciechowski, with a full rack of gear, reaches the top first. In typical fashion, he strikes a conversation with box lunch couple. I know Woj is a lot of BS, so pay little attention till I hear, "What are these?" Box lunch male is pointing to hexes, copperheads, saddle wedges, and a few friends, all of which have stopped sending their subtle chimes down the valley. "These?" Woj, still in a sweat, says, "These are trinkets we bring for the tourists."
And our next reader is Lucille Seibert.
Long Island, can you hear me okay? Long Island during the war. Anchors away. Long Island during the war. We kids sang war songs. Anchors away, my boys, while we played pirates. A fallen tree was our ship. Its roots smelled like root beer. We sang from the halls of Montezuma. Off we go into the wild blue yonder. My dad was in the Coast Guard Reserves. He was an accountant at Grumman Aircraft. They built bombers. We kids were paid for Japanese beetles, 25 cents a jar. I was afraid of bugs, but I filled a jar from Freeman's Hedge. Clip 'em between jar and cover, leaves and all, someone told me. So I did. Our meat was rationed. The butcher gave me and my brother each a slice of bologna till my mother stopped buying from him. She heard rumors he was black market. I was the only one in the family who liked Spam. We heard rumors of blackouts. How will people see coming home from work without streetlights, I asked. I have a coin, a German mark, my brother found under the jungle gym at John Street School. He threw it away, so now it's mine. My mother tried to take it. She spoke of spies, but I begged and pleaded. I knew we were fighting a war, but now she told me we were fighting Germany. But we're German. You told me Germans are good people. Germans are warm and hardworking, my mother said, but some of them are bad. We're fighting the bad ones. Finally, the war ended. 2 years later, my father found a new job 200 miles from home. In October, my parents gave me a big box, told me to fill it with my toys. I walked away. Days later, we sat in a parlor car, my brother and I with coloring books, the train speeding north, far from all our friends. When I was a teenager, my mother told me her dad left Germany because he didn't want to fight in Hitler's army.
Wow, great. Some of you may know Lucille has studied with in the Mad Women in the Attic program some years ago with Pat Dobler, and she has a very engaging, very interesting book available for sale, so you might want to speak to her about that. And the next poet is Jill Faria. It's Jill. Okay, it's not Jill. Jewel. Sorry, it's Jewel Faria. It's Jewel.
That's what I'm about to do.
Hello, Joan.
That's okay. This is from a book by Paul Guest called My Index of Slightly Horrifying Knowledge. And I just read it, and I liked it, and I wanted to share it. A long time I've wanted to say something. A long time I've wanted to say something and not know the next word until it busied my mouth. Love talk, anger, consolation, lies, mad hints at the edge of green water where fish and snakes swam weirdly away from my lonesome post. 5 dozen kinds of greetings and one of severance entered this conversation I am having with the earth. Oh world, I want to love you better than I do, forgiving every satellite dish bolted to the roof and pointed toward the ubiquity of the sky and all it holds within it like a gravid cloud, darkness first of all, and then the post-mortem flare of the stars, and fixed between both, satellites soaking ourselves with beamed invisible pornography and all its stark frustrations, its spacey coupling, its theater of vicious hunger. How many times have I gone home through that rain, my body perforated by waves of strange ecstasy? World, I've wanted to box you on your huge ear or hide something from you that you badly want, right then, that instant, this now. I've wanted to pour you out until you're empty, worth filling up again. I am not talking to you anymore. Tired as I am of gravity and tired as I am of my bones, the sullen sameness of their pain, let me just whistle a sad song into the newness of the air. Let me plan out, let me devise and arrange and braid one lost path to the next. Let me save something from vague peril. It is all around us, after all, danger or love or war, or spontaneous jamborees on a hilltop littered with fiddles. I am thinking of love, which means in my tongue that I am praying for it to be saved from never knowing me.
The next poet is Artie Solomon.
Thank you. First, I want to especially thank Christopher Collins and Ellen McGrath Smith. I haven't heard either one of you before, and I really enjoyed very much your work. And now I'm going to read what was my only attempt at a sonnet. I call it kind of a pseudo-sonnet, and I'm dedicating it tonight to the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Los Angeles Kings, the Pirates, Thelonious Monk, and the Charlie Mingus. I think it's only too bad when the dedication turns out to be better than the poem, but sorry, this is called Not Exactly Shakespeare, which could either be the biggest understatement or the biggest overstatement, depending on how you look. Not exactly Shakespeare. She sits amid the daily drone, a curly beauty, but not alone. Her crosswords, unpaid bills remain. Her fiber artwork keeps her sane. Her quiet moments break my thought. Her eyes look up at me, I'm caught. She knows my needs, my gnawing needs. I must ignore the lustful pleas. My pants too long, my legs too short. More work for her, I must report. That I will rip what she must sew. Of this I'm certain that I know. My thoughts return to writing lines. My member shrinks to normal size. Thank you.
I just didn't understand that poem at all. The next poet reading is the amazing and the wonderful Fred Peterson, who has a great book for sale, by the way, and which Michael referred to as just an amazing Americana. And it's a wonderful book, and I really commend it. I suggest you get a copy of it from him tonight or sometime soon. Fred Peterson.
Tonight or sometime soon could be at Caliban's bookstore, the awesome bookstore, online on my eBay. Just Google Fred Peterson on online, and you might be able to find it there, or I'll have it here sometime. But anyway, sometimes you have to clean out your drawers. And I did. And today I was going through, and I have no idea when this poem was written. It's an old poem, and so nobody's heard it. And I said, I'll do something different. So the title of the poem is It's Not Over in Killarney. Tooralooralooray, tooralooralay, tooralooralooray. It's an Irish lullaby. It's not over in Killarney, with Blake still shimmering blue, and McGillicuddy reeks with towering peaks, shading countryside's glorious hue, with a mantle eternally new. Many years ago, McCarthy's ruled the moors from Tralee's quiet port to O'Sullivan Reach shores, with Elizabethan grants and deeds, providing the peasants with their meagerly needs. Me mother sang a song to me of a lovely colleen and her handsome young lad, who wooed in the glen near the Kilorgan green and raised a large brood on potatoes and beans. In tones so soft and low, she spoke of strange little creatures from down under the earth, with squeaky high voices and peculiar features and manners unfit for particular teachers. Just a simple little ditty detailing the plight of Leprechaun Squadron 104, who gave the bad ogre one heck of a fight and brought back the booty on All Hallows Night. In her sweet old Irish way, with bright eyes shining, she recounted the tale one evening while dining of the leprechaun's coat with the solid gold lining obtained from years of rainbow strip mining. I'd give the world if with one magical nod I'd be in that glorious land where I'd never grow old, and tell tales that my mother has told of the mysteries that lie neath the sod and the closeness one's heart is to God. I'd give the world if she could sing that song to me today. Tooraloorala, tooraloorali, tooraloorala. It's an Irish lullaby.
I know. That was so cool. Wow. I don't know, Nancy. I sure want to follow that. But the next poet... Okay. And the next poet is my good friend Nancy Esther James, wonderful poet.
Well, I was actually going to read two poems, but they go together, kind of, so I don't want to pick one and not read the other, and I don't want Joan to get into trouble with Jimmy. So fortunately, Fred has also a copy of this. This is The Potter's Wheel, our Pittsburgh Poetry Society anthology of prize-winning poems from the last 3 years. So I'm going to read one of my poems from here. And I'm going to explain something. I read last week, and at other times I have read poems from my series about my fictional character, Ellen Davis, whose life is based on my life as a child. Now, when I submit Ellen Davis poems to a Pittsburgh Poetry Society contest, we're supposed to be submitting them anonymously. So I always change the character's name because people know I write Ellen Davis poems. So, could you follow that? Yes. So this was really an Ellen Davis poem, but she's Amy in this poem. Amy's Field. It's so nice today, we'll go for a hike. Amy brightened at Miss Gordon's words. She could walk under trees, past gardens, decide which house she liked best, instead of doing everything wrong in gym, where she'd be picked last for a team, couldn't run fast or hit anything. Away from the white brick schoolhouse, down shady sidewalks, farther, farther, across a wide road to a steeper street, where Miss Gordon halted halfway up. There at the top, a blaze of sunlight, shone through a forest of tall weeds. If they walked that far, what beyond? Perhaps a field wide as the sky, filled with light, silent except for birds. But the class turned around and marched down, back in school as the bell rang for next class. They never hiked that way again. For years, in Amy's dreams, she climbed that hill alone, reached the top, pushed through weeds, beheld an endless golden meadow beckoning her to walk farther, farther.
The next poet is Rose Lizak.
I'm glad you do that, because when I do that, it falls apart.
Hello. This poem is Angeline. She slides in late, morning leaves stuck to her shoes, running for the time clock. October rain only grows umbrellas. Dampened fingers shake as she twists up her hair, wraps an apron around her waist, and ties that forever bow. Her day is here, the clang of silverware, the scurry of hands to clear. Grabbing all what remains from her table, she labors, taking orders. She smiles, once ahead of young dreams, carries their food. Her wrist bends backward under the weight of their consumption.
The open mic is rocking tonight. Whoa. And finally, I believe this is the last poet reading the open mic, and that will be Joel Coggins. Joel, are you still here? He is still here. Woo, woo. Have you read here before? Have you read here before?
I've never read here before.
Oh, my God, newbie.
I've been coming here for several summers now. I thought tonight would be just the perfect night. So, because between Chris and Barbara and Ellen, I owe a lot to the three of them as a writer and as a Pittsburgh transplant. And I'm going to read a poem that I actually wrote like 6 years ago in a class for Barbara. It's a imitation of one of Terence Hayes's The Blue Terence poems. It's one after Lorca. It's an imitation, it's a parallel form, so where Terence Hayes used a noun, I use a noun, pronoun, so it creates a parallel form. It's called After Hours. It's after Terence Hayes, and his original poem was after Lorca. I want to fall asleep by you, you tired old maid. I want you to put on the mask of feathers. I want to breathe out the end of this twilight period. I want to jump the shark and the shark's old friend, the fossil. I want an earful of apologies and diamond chain. If these words and grit teeth can get to sleep tonight, I want to cover three city blocks like a shadow. I want to take you. I want to stop the world to catch your breath. I want to cast away those troubles, clouds of your conscience. I want to crash into these dark thoughts of evening. I want to destroy the shadow. I want to be the shadow, and I want to destroy it with its tired eye for indifference, its locked door, its unfolding sheets and downturned frames in witness. I want to break down the worn-out black shadows of headboards and ashtrays, your silhouette, your anger and frustrations, your daily works. If all of this is true, I want to be burnt by your cigarette's glow. I want the pup's coddling and the dog's bite. I want the spirit of the fight, but not its bloody nose. I want the carpet's comfort, but not its placement beneath you. I want nothing of earth. I want to feel each breath in your body and just wait there. I want to be your skin. I will never touch you. I do not want to be your bedclothes. I do not want to be the waking silence or question in the night. When I learn our meaning, sleepless, I want to kill the light. I will be the shadow. Thanks.